And here we go! Yes, this is on again. This is the Ignite Rock Podcast. This is your host, Ahmed Khalifa, and this is where I talk to awesome creative individuals who have created some awesome stuff using WordPress. Welcome to the show, and thank you very much for joining me. I'm so happy that you have chosen to spend your time with me today on episode 7 of the Ignite Rock Podcast. So today I will be talking to Ben Usher Smith. He is an illustrator and a web designer, someone I know personally through the WordPress meetup group here in Edinburgh, and he's a very talented guy who really knows his stuff. So really, this is where we're going to be talking about what goes behind the scene when it comes to web design, and what he will do is going to share us his insights and some tips about how to work with one. And it's just useful stuff, really good stuff to know. So if you want today's show notes, they are available on igniterock.com/episode7. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's chat with Ben Usher Smith, and I'll catch you again at the end on the interview.
And here we go again, everyone. I have Ben here on the line, a really talented web designer, illustrator, and obviously someone who knows quite a bit about WordPress as well. We're going to be talking quite a bit in the creativity side, and also about how he has built up his business and what goes behind the scene, really, for a web designer. And I'm sure we can learn a lot from Ben. So, Ben, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate your time, and I hope that you can share some insight about what you do. So why don't we start off with that? Let's talk about, can you just tell us about yourself, your background, and how you got to where you are today?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. About myself, I'm a designer and an illustrator. I originally wanted to be a fine artist, and many moons ago, like, went to art college, which I promptly dropped out of after discovering it wasn't really, like, for me. And shortly after dropping out of art college, I was roaming the mean streets of Edinburgh, and saw an advert in a window for a job for somebody to take money in an internet cafe. And this was probably about 98 sort of time. And one of the things that I'd always had a big fear of throughout sort of my teen years was, like, you know, computers. I mean, I had a lot of friends who were really geeky, and they, you know, they had like early computers, and they were doing all sorts of stuff. Like, some of them were making music, and some of them were, like, you know, messing about with early sort of like art-based programs and stuff. But it was just something that I couldn't get my teeth into, and I was really quite sort of technology phobic. And I thought, you know, seeing this advert in the window was kind of like one of these sort of like moments where I was like, this is it, I'm going to challenge myself, and I'm going to push myself into out of my comfort zone. So I went in and promptly told a lie, saying that, oh, I knew all about computers and I was very happy to take money and I can help people get on the internet and stuff like this. And then proceeded to run about, like, learning as much as I possibly could in the first, like, few weeks there. And shortly after starting work there, I started to get really interested in sort of like the web and Adobe Photoshop, which was sort of like, you know, a very early version back then, and started sort of like doing bits and pieces whilst I was working behind the counter there and, like, learning stuff. And then they saw that I had an interest in that, and they were running courses for a variety of, like, different people. So some courses for sort of like 30 plus sort of students and things like that. And they invited me to be a course tutor there. And then from that, they didn't invite me to be a course tutor, but they invited me to help out at first. And then shortly after that, like, I started working as a sort of a trainer there as well. And through that, I started doing web design and experimenting with design on computer based design even. And that's just basically how I got my start on things. After that, I went on to sort of like work for different like agencies and various bits and pieces. And now I'm working freelance for myself, something that I've kind of like done off on and off for a number of years now. But like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. So that's kind of like a bit of a background of where I started and how I got to where I'm going.
So it's interesting that you said that, you know, you dropped out of college for your course. And, you know, I wouldn't know myself, but would you say that your experience from, you know, doing the courses and the fact that you are doing, call it offline art, did it have an impact to what you are doing today? Does it make a difference for you as a web designer?
Definitely. No, I think it definitely has an effect. I mean, as an illustrator now, I still do like a lot of stuff using traditional materials. So I still do like stuff by hand, using sort of like brushes, pens, all sorts of like mixed media. I really like screen printing and like to sort of like when I can go to the Edinburgh Printmakers, which is just an awesome facility here in Edinburgh that you can get access to if you do some short courses there. You can then get a membership and then start sort of like doing stuff there. But I think having that relationship between like the physicality of like drawing and making things with your hands and then looking at problems in the virtual world in terms of just like websites and stuff, I think having an understanding of both of those things is like a plus, because you often see problems through a different perspective, and you can also like relate to people in a different way as well when you're discussing and talking about it. Because sometimes what you find is that people relate certain sort of like design concepts to the physical world when they're quite different when you're looking at it on, say, like a website or something.
That's really interesting. You know, in your journey, you know, obviously we're talking a lot about the artistic side of things. At what point, what about in that journey is when you first got into WordPress?
WordPress was something that I kind of got into, I'm just trying to think, around about sort of 2005-ish. And that happened when I was working for, I had been working as a freelance illustrator for a time. And then I got I'd done a couple of like large sort of like large-ish commissions 1 year, which kind of took me out of the game for a long, long period of time. And when I reached the end of that, I basically kind of like, you know, plateaued, and I didn't really have much work due to come in, and started like looking about and like looking to learn new things. And I started to get really into looking at sort of accessible design and CSS and stuff like this. And I started freelancing for an agency in town, and that agency in town had ties with a lot of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival stuff. And one of the directors at the agency, his best friend from school was a comedian stroke songwriter called Tim Minchin. And he was performing in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and he had gotten, I think he'd gotten a site built in WordPress in Australia, which is where he's from, in probably shortly after when WordPress had first come out. So I'm not sure exactly. I think it's maybe 2000. Is it 2003? Something like that.
When quite early. Yep. Sounds about right.
So he'd had this site that his friend had put together for him, and he was coming to Edinburgh to do some shows, and he wanted some stuff on that. And basically, myself and one of the developers there, we were sort of tasked with redesigning and reworking this site in, you know, like over the course of like 2 or 3 days before like he started doing shows in Edinburgh. I remember the whole thing being like one of those sort of like projects that was compressed into a ridiculously short space of time. And we both sort of like sighed, thinking, God, there's no way that we're going to manage to do all this in the amount of time that we've got. And we just sort of opened up WordPress. Both of us had like read a little bit about it, and we got sort of like stuck in. And I was just so impressed with what we could both do in such a short space of time. We completely, you know, reworked this site, redesigned this site, and reskinning it, the theme. Probably some of the stuff that we did was probably not sort of done in the best practices of like WordPress, but you know, it was really flexible what we could do, and I was just so surprised and impressed with what we could do. I mean, we put in, I think we put in a calendar and all sorts of stuff, and just things that you'd have difficulty doing with a lot of like other sort of like solutions that were available at the time. So that was my first exposure to WordPress, and then after that, we especially when I was working that job, I found like more and more opportunities to be using WordPress for sort of like certain types of projects, because you could do quite a lot in a relatively short space of time. So especially like projects where they had like tight budgets and things, we could like put together a really nice site with a lot of nice features in a comparatively short space of time, compared to sort of like building, say, like or designing a bespoke sort of PHP based site.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's obviously one of the big benefits of WordPress, is that it can, you know, suitable for the small, medium, and large company. Then you're right, for those on a tight budget, you can get a decent site, and of course they will have full control of it, and they can kind of take over and do what they want with it, really. So I think I can definitely appreciate and understand that as well. So this is the one thing that people sometimes get confused about, is, you know, you see the name thrown around around the web, is web designer, and, you know, WordPress web designer or whatever around that kind of wording. Is there a difference between the two? I mean, there is a difference, it's obvious, in terms of WordPress, but in terms of what you do, is there a difference between the two titles, quotation mark, should we call it, web designer and WordPress web designer?
I guess it's just another label, really. I mean, I would term myself as a web designer, not a WordPress web designer. And I guess if you're a company looking for somebody specifically with WordPress skills, then I guess it's a good way to sort of like get people to sort of, you know, to sort of like focus on a specific group. But I wouldn't, personally, I don't see any sort of like clear division between the two, aside from like, you know, just being an identifier.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. When, from my experience anyway, when working with web designer, it does help if the customer, the client, they provide as much information as possible to the web designer, so that, you know, they have something to go towards and a direction that they can go toward. But it's something that not a lot of people are familiar with. So how would you recommend for anybody out there, if they want to, you know, work with a web designer or you know, make the most out of their existing web designer, what would you say is the best way for them to help get the most out of doing that?
I suppose in a way, like, I could probably take a step back and think about the question that you said before, that about the difference between the web designer and the WordPress web designer. In terms of just like naming and things, I think like it depends on how you view a web designer or a WordPress web designer or a designer even. I always had like an issue with the name web designer for a time. I just like thought it had like a lot of shtick attached to it for some reason. So for a time I just like called myself a designer, although like mainly I did web stuff, although I did other things. And now I'm a lot more comfortable about using sort of like the moniker web designer. And I think the reason I sort of like go back and reflect on that is because I think a designer ultimately is there to solve problems. And you need to solve them within a set of constraints, and those constraints are usually going to be defined by who you're working for. So it might be to do with like the materials that are available to you. It might be to do with the time that you've got. It might be to do with the budget. It might be to do with the audience. And I guess if you're commissioning a designer, you can help them by, you know, identifying them, you know, identifying those sort of like constraints. So identifying the materials, identifying the time, the budget, etc. If you don't have a clear set of like constraints, or you don't necessarily have a clear set of goals, then, you know, in a way, a good designer should help you to find those. So, you know, it's part of a designer's job to help to identify those constraints, and also to help you define clear goals as well. So every design task in a project needs to have a goal associated with it. Otherwise, it's really difficult to actually determine whether you're actually succeeding in what you're trying to do. So, I mean, if you've got a good designer, you want to be working with somebody who you can have a conversation with, who is kind of like helping you on your journey to help you find like the things that you are wanting to achieve, to help you identify like the problems that you might encounter on the way. One of the things that I actually do as part of like my process as a designer, and I sometimes do this with illustration as well, is I use something called a visual inventory. Now, a visual inventory is actually a concept that was that I came across, that was first introduced to me by a guy called Dan Moll, who works for a company called Super Friendly in the States. He also used to work as a design director at Happy Cog, which is where it's Jeffrey Zeldman's company that was formed. And Jeffrey Zeldman wrote a really formative book about, like, you know, web standards, called Designing with Web Standards. And if you haven't read that book, I can highly recommend it. It's an excellent, excellent book.
Anyway, I'll put down a show note then. That sounds good. Yep.
Dan Moll's visual inventory concept was this idea that you basically collect references, and then you pose questions directly against those references. It's a little bit like, for those of you who might have come across it working in companies, it's a little bit like the concept of a mood board, where you kind of like you stick stuff on a board, and then you say, well, you want these sort of like customers, you like these sort of colors and all this sort of thing. But instead of doing that, just like having a board with like a series of images on it, like a crazy sort of like pinboard thing, instead of just doing that, you frame up very specific questions. Now, I've kind of like developed and modified Dan's idea a little bit for myself to work with my clients. And generally what I find is that I will take certain parts of the design problems that they're having. So say, for example, they're a small retail concern. Like say they're a shop, they want to sell their products online, and you know, they've got an interesting catalog of stuff which kind of like makes them like a little bit unique from your run of the mill high street shop. Say they may be like stocking things from, you know, different parts of the world where it's a little more unusual or off kilter. And what they've kind of like said to me is like, you know, they really like eBay and the way that it works. And then they've maybe like given me another reference that like, oh, they totally like the way that Apple's site looks. And, you know, maybe they've given me some like references to sort of like colors they like and things like this. So what I would like then do is go away and have a like think about what they were talking about. You know, well, why did they like eBay? And so maybe like go and take some screenshots of like pages on the eBay site and look at like sort of like user flows and how like the thing works. And then taking those like screenshots, maybe like comp them up into like a presentation, and then against each like screenshot, maybe put a question. So like, you know, I noticed that on this page, you know, we've got an interesting filter here, and I could totally see how this would work with your line of shoes that you're planning on selling online, because it would help you to sort of like narrow the search down this way. Is this something that you could see working on your site? You know, that would maybe be an example sort of question that I might sort of like frame up. And then continue doing that, you know, like maybe like take an example of this sort of like Apple site or something and say, the clean lines work really well, and some of your sort of like Nordic inspired furniture, if it was like photographed on a nice plain white background, would look really good in this way, and blah blah blah. So, you know, going through methodically having these things, and then I would have a conversation with my client, like talking through all these different examples, and see what their reaction was to it. So, you know, the classic thing that I used to find doing this was that, you know, they would give you an example like eBay, and you'd come back and think, you know, they obviously like eBay because it's got all these filters on, and it does this, and it allows you to sort of like narrow down this. And it's a great sort of like shopping experience, because you can do get to what you're after really quickly. And they go, no, that's not why we like it. And you're like, well, why do you like it? And it's like, oh no, we like the color of the buttons.
So, you know, you all of a sudden you learn something about your client.
You learn that your idea of something is actually quite different from their idea of something. And by doing, you know, quite often, like when I'm like working with somebody, I might like have 30 or 40 of those examples, like in one presentation. And by having that at the front of doing a project before I like start sort of doing any actual design work, and before we've actually finalized like specifications or whatever, you learn so much about each other. And what I tend to do is take that presentation and then just adjust it with different sort of like things, so that they then have a reference, and it becomes like a Rosetta Stone for us both, so that we can understand what we mean, you know, as the project goes on, and we can look back and see what that actually means. So, you know, a good designer should be looking at ways in which they can communicate with their client, I think. And if you're looking for a good designer, look at somebody you feel like you can connect with and understand. I might not necessarily connect with everybody on a certain level. You know, I'm not the right designer for every person. And likewise, you might find that there are designers out there that you can work really, really well with, but like other people would struggle to work with. It's just like finding the right person, which can be challenging, but I guess it's sort of a suck it and see thing.
I think it applies to almost any industry, isn't it, really? You know, if you're going to work with someone and pay for someone's service, you want to be able to feel comfortable with that person. I mean, the most basic example I can think of is, you know, whoever cuts your hair, the hairdresser or a barber, most of the time people go to the same one over and over again because you're more comfortable with that person. So, and that's on a very basic level. On a web designer, yeah, it does make sense that, you know, be able to have a good relationship with each other. But I guess that, you know, the moral of the story is, if someone comes up to you and say, can you design a website, I'll leave you to it, goodbye, that's not going to work. So it's not going to help anyone, really. It's not going to help yourself, not going to help a designer. So one thing I've noticed about yourself is that, you know, I know we talk a lot about WordPress on this podcast and on my site, but I believe that you also have a bit of experience with Squarespace as well. So, you know, you have a bit of experience with both of them. So, you know, how's your experience with that compared to with WordPress, and whether have you had any kind of designing experience on Squarespace as well?
I suppose that it kind of like that locks in quite nicely with what you were saying, what you asked me before, basically. I guess like with all these, the reason for me exploring Squarespace is because I'm one for feeling like if you're in a situation where like everybody's kind of like on board with one particular thing, and I think a lot of the people around me and a lot of the people that I was working with were all very much like pro WordPress, or if I'm talking about like more like my sort of developer friends, they were all sort of more pro sort of like either using a framework like Laravel or doing something bespoke or using like Ruby or something like this. And I had heard a lot about Squarespace, and I just thought, well, you know, I think I should sort of, you know, experiment using it, because essentially at the end of the day, I think that there's a lot more services now that are available for people who are just starting out, who maybe can't afford to get a designer, that are actually very good. I mean, the hosted WordPress sites that you can get now are very good. And then you've got like all these sort of like things like Weebly and Wix and all these other things. But Squarespace kind of stood out for me because like a lot of people that I respected who weren't necessarily in the web industry had like started talking about it and using it. So I decided that I would kind of start to investigate it a little bit more seriously. I started experimenting, doing a couple of things for myself at first, and just messing about with what I could and couldn't do. And then I actually did a few projects for people using Squarespace, and I found it really good for what it was. It's a very different experience and a different animal from WordPress in a lot of respects. But I think for somebody like maybe starting out who isn't too sure where to go, you can do quite a lot with Squarespace. The one thing that I found very interesting as a thing once I sort of like started to get into using Squarespace was that although you couldn't do you don't have like the same sort of like level of like plugins and things that you have in WordPress. In fact, you don't have any plugins. You do have like quite a full feature set though. You've got like a shopping cart facility that's fairly easy to implement. You've got you know, nice things like sort of Google Maps and stuff that's all built in. The one thing that I did notice as I used it is that they have got a facility to sort of like export out of Squarespace and into WordPress. So exporting your sort of like core content out of the site. It doesn't sort of like export everything verbatim, but say if you're a small business and you just want to get something up and running quickly that looks nice and works okay, Squarespace is probably quite a good solution. And then if you want to say they then sort of like step it up and like look at like maybe a self-hosted WordPress solution, you can do that with Squarespace. You can just export your blog and stuff out and like continue on with that. So yeah, I think it's different horses for different courses. It really, really depends on what you're trying to achieve. The clients that I used Squarespace for, they've either wanted something turned around incredibly quickly, or they've got a very specific set of needs that are addressed using Squarespace. And what I actually found myself doing using Squarespace was instead of like spending, I could actually spend a lot more time on helping them focus on developing and improving like maybe their brand and the general aesthetic of like what they're doing, than kind of just sort of, you know, like than spending a lot of time like maybe like doing sort of like front end development sort of side of things. But having said all that, it's a lot more limited than WordPress in terms of like what you can do design wise.
I think that from my experience anyway, it does seem a lot more limited from a functional perspective. And if you want to grow as well, if you want to scale the website, from a very brief experience and from seeing other people using Squarespace, it does seem to be quite limited with that. But on the other hand, what I have noticed is that you're right, it's very, very easy to put something together which looks quite good actually for someone if you're not in a design background or even a web background. You can put up quite a good looking site very quickly using Squarespace, but then in the long term, is that for you or not? You know, that's another story as well. So tell me, what's your biggest strength?
Can I actually just go back on the Squarespace thing? Because
go for it.
I'll then answer my biggest strength. My biggest strength is not keeping up with the questions. It's with Squarespace. What I would say is that there are a lot of people out there, and this kind of goes to a lot of it focuses on a lot of the people that I work with. There's a lot of people out there who maybe lack the skills and also don't want to necessarily part with the money to get a decent site up and running and have some business idea that they want to get going with. And I think that Squarespace really works very well for people who maybe don't have, you know, the sort of people. Well, I mean, from my experience, and I'm sure there'll be designers out here listening to this who'll recognize this, where you've got somebody who's got very, very little money, but expects the earth for their website. You know, they want it to be all singing, all dancing. They want fancy images. They want to have interactive maps. They want to have a shopping cart facility and all of this sort of stuff. And Squarespace can have all of that out the box really, really quickly. And you can do it for a very, very minimal cost. And I think for those sort of people, it's a good test for their business. If they've got this fantastic business idea that they're telling you about that is going to be wonderful, and if you pull them together a site for peanuts and they'll give you more work in the future or whatever, it's everybody's kind of heard this sort of story where, you know, if you do this one job for me, I'll be able to I'll make sure that I remember you when my business is super successful or when I'm the next Facebook. If these people, if their business is really valid and works, it's a good way of just getting something off the ground really, really quickly and just testing it out. You can do the same thing with WordPress. There's no doubt about it. But I think that there are certain clients that I've encountered where it's Squarespace is just a lot, lot easier in translating it. Just thought I'd say that whilst I remembered, because it's one of those things where sometimes it's easy to sort of sound as if I'm being dismissing one against the other, but it's I think
I don't think we're dismissing either. They both have pros and cons at the end of the day, with WordPress or Squarespace. So it just depends who you are, so it doesn't really matter really. So No, that's fair enough. I think you made some really good points there. I guess you can then answer what I was going to ask you anyway. So,
my strengths.
I forgot about that. Yeah, strength. Let's go to that one as well. So,
I guess my strengths are my willingness to learn new things and to maybe push myself out of my comfort zone in order to do so. I think if it weren't for the fact that I did that, I probably wouldn't have experimented with Squarespace. I probably wouldn't be talking to you on this podcast about web design. I'd say that was one of my biggest strengths.
I like that. I like that attitude. And so then on the other way around, what's your biggest weakness and how do you go around it?
My biggest weakness is underestimating how long things take and overestimating what I can achieve in a day usually. And I get around it a number of different ways. I basically just try and look at just different ways to sort of hack my life and look at getting my important things done for the day. I've tried all sorts of stuff, but I guess my one thing that sort of keeps me on track is just trying to make sure that I focus on one specific task a day
whether I have other things to do or not, just try and like keep focus on that one specific task. And also just sort of like trying not to beat myself up when I don't actually sort of like get everything that I like write on my to-do list for the day done. I think it's really important not to sort of like get bogged down into sort of like berating yourself every time you don't meet your own expectations. Because I think, well, I mean, I don't know about other people, but I always seem to sort of like set myself like quite a high bar in terms of like what I want to achieve and what I want to do. And I think that sometimes that can end up being sort of like counter to what you're trying to achieve. And certainly for me, it's like I've gone through phases in my life where like, because I've kind of like overcommitted to myself, I've kind of like felt like quite sort of like washed out and even like a little depressed when like I don't achieve like the things I want to achieve. And it's like taking a step back from that and just like taking some time out and just sort of not giving myself such a hard time. I do yoga and like meditation as well. And I think that also helps with me controlling that.
Deep stuff there, Ben. Very deep stuff. I think a lot of people could take insight to that as well. And, you know, sometimes people underestimate how powerful the likes of meditation can be and can do to yourself. It's something that I kind of knew now and then as well. So it does make a difference. So, thank you for sharing that as well. It's really good. So, just to, wrap it up and round up the last few questions then I have for you is, what advice would you give to those who want to start their own WordPress site?
What advice would I give? Do it.
Simple.
go give it a try. I mean, there's nothing really stopping you from just like giving it a shot. If you don't want to go down the sort of route of self-hosting a WordPress site, then try the hosted option. If you do want to go down the self-hosted route, then there's plenty of like options out there going from like very basic to very expensive depending on what you're wanting to achieve. I would suggest start off small. Keep it simple. Whatever you do, just like start off, keep it simple and try it out and try and like if you're looking at like trying to sort of like sell things online, you've got some ideas to sell things online or whatever, or you've got like a product or something, start off with a couple of small things and see how that works. If you're looking at like doing a blog or something, just concentrate on like, one thing, whether that's just like writing posts about a specific type of thing or whether that's just like keeping it regular and stuff like that. Just whatever you do, just keep it simple. But do it.
But do it. That's the last one. I like that one. Just do it. Just to clarify for everyone else, if you want to go for the self-hosted option, if you're there, this is the WordPress.org, whereas the WordPress.com is a little bit different to the self-hosted option, where you can have really much more abilities to kind of expand plugins and so on and so forth. But at the same time, you can always experiment around with the WordPress.com option as well. So what would the advice would you give to those who want to start their own web design company, or even like a start freelancing in web design?
My suggestion would be, well, it depends where you are in your career at the moment. I mean, if you're just coming out of school, or you're still at school and you're looking to sort of like up your game with like sort of like your web design skills and start getting some projects, I would suggest just like making sure that you've got a broad set of skills and, making sure that you're looking for opportunities like maybe to work with other people, whether that's like, you know, whether you're looking for sort of like maybe work experience opportunities at maybe a small agency, or whether it's just like collaborating with some friends or some peers. I guess like if you're in that sort of position, my advice would be to look for people that you can work and learn from. If you're in a company just now and you maybe got some like design skills and you've already been like working in the industry for a little bit of time, maybe if you are working in the industry and you've been working there for a little bit of time, I think one thing that I'm quite aware of now is that a lot of people are very, very focused on specific areas. If they're working for like larger companies, if you're in a larger company and you maybe like you only do, you know, like JavaScript front end stuff, then like, you know, go learn a bit about back end stuff and like learn a bit more about design. If you only do sort of like graphic design stuff, go and like learn, you know, a bit more about, you know, how to pull together like the HTML for a site and like maybe like look at a backend technology like PHP or something like this. I mean, you can do that. I can highly recommend like things like Treehouse for like learning these sort of things. And also the guy who used to work for Treehouse, Zach Gordon, he offers some excellent sort of like tutorials on WordPress with a sort of like a JavaScript sort of like focus. And Tonya Mork is another person who offers like a lot of like great sort of WordPress resources. She offers like courses which have got like more of a sort of a PHP focus than a JavaScript focus. In fact, like you could probably do Zach and Tonya's stuff and it would be like quite balanced. But I think if you're kind of in that position where you've kind of like got experience in the industry, but it's very, very focused and you want to sort of like break out on your own, I think broaden your skills base first and then start getting some projects in, maybe like line up, get like sort of like 3 months worth of wages in the bank before you like take the plunge and leave your job, because it can be challenging sort of like getting work in initially when you start sort of like freelancing.
Oh yeah.
And then I guess, yeah, I'm just trying to think if I would offer any other advice. Yeah, keep on learning.
Oh yeah, keep on learning. I'll mention these, you know, Zach Gordon's Treehouse and the likes. I'll definitely put them in the show notes for anyone who's interested to learn more about that as well. So I think it's definitely something you should be thinking about.
There's one more thing, actually, I will recommend to anybody who is wanting to become a web designer, and no matter where they are at, I highly, highly, highly recommend that everyone wanting to be a web designer, if they haven't already read it, should go and read Mike Monterio's book, Design is a Job. It's a fantastic book, and it gives you such a great insight into what it takes to be a good designer in sort of like the web design world today.
And I put that in the show note as well. That sounds good. So just to, you know, to wrap it up, the last question, we get all sentimental and stuff. What are you most proud about with your own business as well?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm not sure if there's any one thing that I'm particularly proud about in terms of like projects that I've done. There are some that I really was pleased with, and there are some that my clients were really pleased with, but I'm not very pleased with. But that's sort of like a vanity thing on my part. I guess the thing that I would be most proud of is the fact that like my business now, and I was looking at this the other week, was my business now has been in operation in some shape or form since 2003. And that just like blew my mind. It was like, wow. Wow. Like I haven't like constantly worked like freelance, like solely freelance since 2003, because I've like done some contracting for other people and I've worked in agencies and stuff. But my business has existed in its current state form since 2003. So I'm pretty proud of that.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's a very big achievement in some way or form. Yeah, Definitely a big achievement to be proud of. So this has been very interesting. So it was interesting to get into the mind of people in different expertise. And now, you know, today we're talking about the web design industry. And I've definitely learned a lot. There's a number of things that I have not taken into consideration. So I definitely appreciate you sharing a lot of your insights, resources, and all the things that I will definitely put in the show notes for anyone to find. If anybody wants to find you or connect with you, where can they do that?
They can connect with me on Twitter at Ben Usher Smith, or on my website, which is just benushersmith.com or bu-s.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well. And you can follow me on Instagram, same name. Don't do Facebook. Not planning to. Yeah, that's it.
Sound good. Well, no, this has all been very, very useful, Ben. I really want to thank you again for sharing so much stuff, so much juicy stuff with everyone today. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And that is it. Thank you, Ben, for coming onto the show. I really appreciate your time and sharing so much insight about what goes behind the scene and in the minds of a web designer. So one of the things that I'm sure you picked up is I asked a question about if you have been a designer in an offline sense, does it have an impact in online when you become a web designer? And from Ben's point of view, it definitely had a massive impact. It's quite interesting to see that because nobody ever really think about it, but I knew I wanted to ask that question. So there you go. If you have ever thought about moving from offline to online, and probably the other way around, it's not impossible. You can do it yourself. So thank you again for listening to this episode. If you want to check out show notes again, igniterock.com/episode7, and I will include all the links and everything that we've talked about the show as well. So that is the end. And of course, if you could do one little thing for me, I would really appreciate it if you could subscribe to my podcast on iTunes. It would be really, really awesome because I really want to help out and reach more people to tell them about the benefit of using WordPress. That is what I want to do. So, thank you again. Hope you enjoy the podcast. And in the meantime, let's rock with WordPress.